Welcome to the Self-Esteem and Confidence Mindset with me, Johnny Pardo.
Welcome back to the Self-Esteem and Confidence Mindset podcast with me, Johnny Pardo. Today, I have a special guest on the episode with me, Richard, where we're going to be talking about self-confidence and communication. So welcome to the show, Richard.
Yeah, thanks, Johnny. I appreciate you having me on.
Appreciate you coming on as well. And I know we're going to get a lot of great, valuable insights today. So appreciate your time for being here today. So I'll just do a quick introduction to Richard, and then we can go a little bit more into his story and the conversation today. So Richard is the founder of Body Talk, and over the past 22 years, his team has trained over 120,000 business leaders around the world to improve their communication and impact, including one client that gained over $1 billion in new business in just 1 year, using the strategies that Richard teaches. Awesome. So, Richard, I'm really looking forward to our conversation about communication today and how you've used that to impact people's lives. So tell us a little bit about what got you into this area.
Yeah, so there's a bit of a story that goes behind this to give people perspective on it, because, you know, for me, this journey has been happening for the last 40 years. So I'm 44 at the moment. And back when I was around 4 years old, I was apparently very confident, had plenty of friends, and was enjoying life. And then around that time, just before my fifth birthday, my parents moved house, and I found myself in a new school and suddenly really lacking confidence. And I can remember being in this new environment, trying to make friends and really struggling with that. And the way that it felt to me was as if I was in a glass bubble where I was looking out, trying to connect with other people and not being able to, and not knowing why. And I noticed, you know, other people around me being able to make friends, but just didn't know why I couldn't do that. And I found that challenge as I went through my life, through my sort of school years, to the point where towards the end of school, I thought, I really have to get a handle on this. I don't know why I seem to be lacking skills in this area, but I feel passionate about it. And a friend of mine gave me a book on body language, so by Alan Pease, which I'm sure many people may have come across. And I read it completely fascinated, thinking that, well, this really opens my eyes to, you know, what is possible in this area, but also felt disheartened, thinking maybe everybody else knows this. I feel like I'm reading something that's like the Holy Grail, but maybe everybody else does this naturally. And decided not to get dispirited, decided that I would actually push myself in this area to overcome the challenge I was having. And so I did something quite unusual. Instead of going off to university where I had some offers, I decided I would go off and do something good for the world, having had a relatively, you know, safe and comfortable background. And so I put myself forward to go on a gap year experience, where I ended up with an opportunity to go and live with Tibetan monks in the foothills of the Himalayas, where when I arrived there, I was by myself. I'd never been overseas without my parents at this point, but found my way across India. It took me about 2 days to get there from Delhi, and finally found this monastery. And it was only when I got there, I realized that the monks didn't speak English. And so they spoke Tibetan, Nepali, and Hindi, but no English. And I then realized I was going to have to figure out how to communicate entirely non-verbally through body language and tone of voice. And it was a massive challenge in the beginning, but by the end of me living there, they could all then have a good conversation in English. I learned how to speak Nepali, and I was able to actually speak Nepali more fluently than French or German, which I'd spent years studying at school. And most importantly, I came away from that experience thinking, I'm able to communicate now non-verbally. I understand how that works, perhaps on a deeper level than you can see in a textbook. And I also realized that I had this passion for standing in front of a group of people, albeit monks, that are not, it's not a scary audience. It's a relatively, you know, easy gig, that they're very receptive to what I wanted to do. Although I had also taught at a local school where the children were a bit more challenging. And I came back with this love for communication. I studied acting for 3 years, in London, where, again, I really wanted to understand, how do you communicate? How do you move and breathe and gesture in a way that impacts an audience and tells a story? And from there, I then began to build up my business to where I am today. And it strikes me as funny sometimes to look back, where there was a lady who came up to speak to me when I just finished this speech I was giving. And the talk was to about 1,000 people. And I say a speech, it was like a 3-hour session that I sometimes do for our clients. And she came up to me and she said, "Oh, Richard, I wish I could be good as a speaker. I wish I was a natural just like you." And I had to say to her, "Wait a second, I'm not a natural at this. I've built these skills. I was the shy kid at school. I'm highly introverted. None of this came naturally. I've just worked on it and gradually built this up." And I said to her, "I hope that gives you confidence that you can do this as well." And it's like the end of that story. It's only very recently that I found out what the challenge was in those school years that was causing difficulties in communication. So I've just recently been diagnosed with high functioning autism. And the strange thing about that is that that would generally mean that you're not good at communication. You're not good at social cues, and that you would really struggle to connect with other people. And so, you know, the people who originally started to spot this in me said that this may be the case for you, but it really shouldn't be, because you are good at communication and you teach communication. In fact, you get on stage and teach communication for hours to hundreds, if not thousands, of people at a time. And so, you know, I hope that for anyone listening to this, it just gives them that sense that if you really want to get better at something, if you commit yourself to it, then actually you can become very highly skilled in that area that you once used to find was a massive challenge.
Wow. I love that. Love that story. And showing that. And also, I think what I got out of that as well, there's sometimes we perceive people as like completely confident and like got no fears or have no challenges. And it's not the case. Well, for a start, we're human beings. It's natural to experience fear, right? to grow through it. It's a very natural thing. And sometimes when we perceive these highly confident or charismatic people on stage, or when they walk into the room, with that level of like charisma, that we think, "Oh wow, it's just natural, and I'm not one of those kind of people." And when we start putting a label on it, right, it can start to really react in accordance with that. But actually, you're sharing that you built up those skills. Love the monk story. That's fascinating. And I guess you had to be on top of your nonverbal skills then. So yeah, that's kind of what I was fascinated with. And I remember reading a book. What is it? Joe Navarro. Nobody.
Oh, yeah,
everybody. Everybody is thinking.
Yeah. I forget the name of the title.
Yeah.
It's probably actually on the bookshelf behind me. It's a good book. So Joe Navarro was in the FBI and was excellent at reading body language, and so has gone on to teach people how to be an expert body language reader for lie detection and for other situations. I think his book is something like What Everybody Is Saying.
I was about to say that. I think that is the book. Yeah. I'm usually very good with book titles. I've forgotten that instance, but yeah, I'm pretty certain it's What Everybody Is Saying. And yeah, I remember reading that, and it's saying things like your feet are very honest signals, and because you know, it's that kind of fight or flight thing. So yeah, tell us a little bit about your experience of working on nonverbal communication more, and how much of an important role that played in your confidence.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the big lesson that I learned from being with the monks was, you know, simply the need for congruency in communication. That, you know, we're in an age now where for a long time people have talked about the need for authenticity, wanting leaders and politicians or your boss just to be straight with you, to have a decent, honest, authentic communication. And so often we feel like we're not getting that. And, you know, what I learned from the monks is, as an example, that if I was trying to teach them the word excited, if I didn't look excited and I didn't sound excited, then there was no way for them to know what I meant. So I could have been saying the word pineapple and it wouldn't have meant any, you know, anything to them. And so I had to make sure to actually express myself that everything I did was going in the same direction. And initially that was a bit of a struggle, but eventually I realized, wait, if I really commit to this, if I totally own whatever word I'm trying to teach them here, then I can connect. Now, the funny message about that is that when somebody does know your language, I've seen this countless times where people say one thing, but their body language and voice is saying something very different. And people, when that happens, there's a split communication. And so if your body language goes one way and your words go in a different direction, then people remember and believe the body, not the voice. So as a simple example, coming back to the word excited, I've seen this countless times at conferences I've worked at where the CEO or maybe the CFO goes up on stage and says, hi, everybody. I'm really excited for you to be here today. And, you know, we've got a really amazing day ahead and everything's great in the company. And you think, just tell your face, at least, you know, look up at people, like look like you genuinely believe in the future of this company. Because if not, then you might say all of the right words, but you're delivering really that very wrong message. And so you've got to work on your congruency. And saying that, it's easy to say it, but actually it can be a challenge to do it, because often what people are doing is that they have habits that they're not aware of, which I often refer to as armor that we have built up through pain or rejection or difficulties we've faced in our life, to create these habits that make us feel safe when we are interacting with people. And we have to let them go. And often they've been part of how we behave for so long, we don't even notice it. And so you sometimes need that feedback from somebody, a coach or even a colleague can be there to let you know, look, you're continuously doing this that is actually pulling away interest from your words. And this is something that I didn't realize until I went to acting school. And acting school is phenomenal for learning communication skills if you go to a good place. So I went to Webber Douglas Academy in London. I was there for 3 years. And at the time that I was there, it was the highest rated drama school in the country, arguably speaking. It had a higher employment rate than RADA. And RADA is the one that everybody seems to know. And so what they did, though, is that they would teach us how to sit, how to stand, how to walk, how to breathe in a way that would have an impact on the person on stage with us or someone watching us on screen or on stage from a theater. And I was amazed at how much I was doing that I didn't have any awareness of. So one incredible exercise we did, this was with our movement teacher. He said, Richard, I want you to stand up and just start walking around, and everybody else in the class, there was 10 people in the class, they're gonna go and follow you and they're going to exaggerate what you're doing. And eventually what happened, I was walking, I had this whole sort of line around behind me who were aiming to mimic my movements and gradually exaggerate it. And then the movement teacher said, come away from the line and watch. And it looked like people were utterly depressed and with terrible posture and dragging their feet across the floor. And I was gobsmacked. I had no idea that I made that impression. And I said, wait, okay, this is a joke. This is a setup. And everyone said, no, this is what you look like every day. And I just hadn't picked up on that. And so it was a great eye opener to think, okay, I want to rethink how I sit, how I stand, how I move, how I hold myself, because we know that how you hold yourself changes how you feel, but also changes how other people react to you. And so, you know, there's no faster way. If you're feeling really upset, really down, really depressed, the fastest way to shift that is, rather than going inside the mind to shift that state, if you physically shift it, then your body says, wait a second. When I'm in this position, this is when I feel great. This is when I feel confident. I must be feeling really good right now, and let you get into that state of confidence. And that's what I'll be doing when I'm backstage and I'm hearing somebody announce, and here is the big keynote speaker, ladies and gentlemen. There's part of like my heart's going, my cortisol spiking, the adrenaline's coming in. But instead of sitting backstage or sort of hunching, folding my arms over, looking at the ground, trying to focus on my words, I'm always there in a state of readiness, thinking, this is a moment I've prepared for. In fact, the words I say in my inner voice are, I'm in the right place. I'm in the right place. I'm in the right place. And the joy of that is that your inner mind, your monkey mind, as I often refer to, is it can't disagree with you. If you say everything's going to be okay, the monkey mind will say, how do you know? You can't tell the future. But if you say to your mind, I'm in the right place. The monkey mind will go, is he? He does seem to be in the right building. They are announcing his name. I guess he's in the right place. I should just chill out and let him get on with what he's doing. And so you can say that while standing in a confident posture and then walk out on stage and be in a much better state. So, you know, that's a long way around of saying congruency is critical in communication. It's important to be aware of what habits you've got, pull them apart so that you get back to a state of being in the position where you were naturally born to stand, born to move, born to breathe, born to use your voice, and really freeing up your ability to connect and communicate.
Yeah, love that. Changing your physiology to move. And I've done a lot of Tony Robbins stuff where it's all about kind of, he's like, the quickest way he teaches people the three S's. And he says, most people start with this strategy. What do I need to do? Right. And then that will impact their story and then their state. But he says, it's the other way around. You need to change that state, get yourself into a good physiological one, whether that, even if you need to do some exercise, press ups, things like that. Mm. And then you kind of get that story, like you were saying, I'm in the right place as well. And then you're ready to kind of face whatever challenge it is. And you go out and do that. Totally resonate with that. I remember just being in reading a book actually, which most people have never come across, but it's called Higher Status. And it was about, by a guy called Jason Capital. And it was about changing your body signals and like being able to like stand, and it was about these power poses, not just about your body signals, but it's also about the way, the environments you're in, your purpose, all these kind of things. I remember taking bits about the body communication in there and applying it to my life. And I was perhaps in a stressful situation, make myself smile, and then I just end up laughing and breaking the pattern. The brain was like, what's going on here? So its reaction was to laugh, and that kind of changed it. And I think I could see the chimp paradox potentially in the back of your...
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's just... Where is it? It's over here.
Yeah, somewhere. That way. Yeah, one of those books. So, when you're saying monkey mind as well. Great, great, great book. So
I'd love to tell you about a health product I use literally every day. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more lasting energy to charge me for my super busy days, physically for working out and mentally for the challenges of the day. Oh, a man has it over-delivered. With AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you get your day right. I grab mine in the morning. It suits me to save significantly on time and get the high quality sources I need to feel my best. It tastes amazingly refreshing too. No disgusting aftertaste. Your subscription comes with a year's supply of vitamin D, which is so important to add in winter months when we don't get as much sunlight. Oh, and don't just take my word for it. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews. You can take advantage and prioritize your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/pardo. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/pardo to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Yeah, certainly changing your physiology. So is there perhaps out of that maybe a couple of ways, perhaps people you've worked with or someone you would encourage to work on their body language each day? A couple of small things?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing that's important to say on this is that a lot of people sometimes reject the idea of doing this because they say, what's wrong with just being myself? And the important thing to note on that is that most people, most of the time, are not being themselves. Even if they think that they are, they're not really. What they are being is a collection of habits that they've built up over the years. And when they say, this is me being myself, what they mean is that they have essentially pigeonholed themselves into saying, over the course of the last 6 months, I think I've mostly had this behavior. Therefore, that must be me, my identity, and all of my potential. And what I like to say to them is, okay, that's one way of you being. but there's also all these other opportunities, all these other ways of you being and behaving and different actions, different decisions that you could be making. So you can stay as you are, or you can actually explore your fullness. You can explore your full potential. So it's worthwhile trying that out. And now an initial one that comes to mind for me, what started to expand my idea of who I could be and what might be me, is that an acting teacher many years ago, he said, he was preparing me for a play where I was the love interest. I was very uncomfortable with that. I was always pretty shy in those sorts of situations. And he gave me a copy of Esquire magazine that had Brad Pitt, you know, the sort of the peak of his age of doing love interest roles, looking very confident in there. And he said, I want you just to spend a week walking around college in your head, believing that you are as confident and as sexy as Brad Pitt. Just do it in your mind. Don't tell anybody what you're doing. Just in your mind, fully believe it. And we'd done a decent amount of work on sort of posture by this point. So I was freed up of the foot dragging action that I used to do. And what was extraordinary about it to me is how differently people then reacted to me. And, you know, importantly in this, I wasn't doing it in a way that was arrogant. I wasn't puffing my chest out or sort of, you know, splaying myself across a sofa or anything like this ridiculous. I was just simply in my mind thinking, okay, this is a character. I'm going to play this character, which is a part of me. I'm not being somebody else. It's a part of me I'm going to explore for this week and just see what happens. And so by doing that, I had people treat me as if I was more confident. I felt more confident within myself. There were women who were more interested in me who previously had paid no attention to me. And people would say, hey, just you seem like you've been on a holiday recently. Like what you seem really... you know, really like you're in a good place. What's going on with you? And in my head, I just thought, okay, this is just a part of me I'm finding. And it's nice to be able to find it. And the thing is that if you stay in that part of yourself for long enough, then you'll go, oh, this is who I am. And I think what's been nice over the years is to find out, well, that's part of who I am, but it isn't me. There is a huge exploration of who I am. And so like, if people want to start looking at this, there's lots of great books they can find. Joe Navarro has a book that you've mentioned, Alan Pease. I have a book on this where people can start to go through these methods. But what I would encourage people to do in the first instance, if they're going to go into a meeting, they're going to do a presentation. And if it saves a virtual meeting, all the better. Just turn on Zoom and do a Zoom recording of yourself. And if it's distracting to have the video up there in front of you beforehand, just, you know, put something in front of it so you don't have to see it, but practice it and then go back and watch it as if you were a viewer and see how engaged you are. See if there's any repeated actions that you tend to do. See what your posture is like. See if the tone really fully matches your message. And then start to play around with it. Explore different parts of you. And, you know, I often used to do this, exploring different versions of a scene as an actor where I'd think, what if Jack Nicholson was doing this scene? What if Al Pacino was playing the judge that I'm playing within this play? How would that come out if that was me? And so by finding those different parts of myself, I was able to connect more with my sense of authority, with my sense of charm, with my sense of inner wisdom, and just doing it by thinking, okay, that's where I see it in other people. What happens if I do that rather than aiming to mimic or be somebody else? And so you can try those things out. You can video it. You can look at it back. And a final thought on that, when you're watching yourself back, it's important to just think, if you were objectively part of the audience, which could be one person or it could be a large group of people, how would you be making people feel? How would you make them feel by the end? Would they be exhilarated? Would they be concerned? Would they be bored? Hopefully not bored. Would they be disappointed? How would you be making them feel? Because the fastest way to change your body language, rather than getting too particular about certain things, and the fastest way to get out of being self-conscious, is before every situation, just think, how do I want this person to feel by the end of this conversation? And apply everything in your body, your tone of voice, your words, your slides, your storytelling, everything towards that goal. And by doing that, you're not in your head. You're actually completely focused on the other people that you're speaking to. So everything in your body and voice should go in that direction.
Wow. there are several ideas that kind of went through for me personally. It's actually an exercise I used to do, and mimic someone with, but at the time I was trying to be too much of them rather than being myself. And I understand what you're saying. It's very much about understanding you're you, but understanding there's a bigger part of you, and perhaps you can try things in different ways if you feel like it could improve, and coming back to that self-awareness. I don't know if you're familiar with the Netflix series, not like watch a huge amount of Netflix, but Suits, you come across Suits?
Yeah, love Suits.
Harvey Specter, I used to kind of model him, and that's a good man to model for confidence. If you ever want to model someone, I always suggest that, the way he just walks into a room and demands. He's the definition of a high status male.
Yeah, he's a really fascinating one, and there's lots of great clips of Suits on YouTube, like the best moments of Harvey Specter and so on. So I watched the whole thing during lockdown. That was one of my places I went for a bit of entertainment. And what I like about watching him is that in some scenes he can go into the shadow side of his archetype, if you like. So in archetypes, this is sort of like a set of behaviors that you can see in different civilizations, and he's got this really charismatic way of coming across. But the shadow of that is that sometimes he can be arrogant, sometimes he can be aggressive, he can go too far. But when he's really in the light version of the archetype, as it's known, when he's right in the center of it and owning it for good, you're right, everything he does in terms of how he moves, walks, and speaks gives that full impression of confidence, and it really works well when you can feel he, as the actor, is just enjoying that sense of whatever I say here is going to happen. I completely believe it. I know that that's going to happen, and it comes through everything in his posture, his tone of voice, and his choice of words. So yeah, sometimes it's useful to be able to see that in somebody else and then see, okay, what about that fits with me? Like if I was to find that part of myself, what does it look like? And another way, a good way for people maybe to understand this is coming back to the idea of just being yourself. If you took the top tennis players in the world, when they first had a tennis lesson, if you said to them, hey, just go and be yourself, they would have lost every tennis game they ever played. They would not be a champion. Instead, what they learn is how to do forehand, backhand, serve, and volley. And if you can't do those, you can never win a game of tennis. But what's key is that when you watch the top 10 men or the top 10 women from any country in the world, they all play the game differently. They're all doing forehand, backhand, serve, and volley, which you need to be a champion of tennis. But every single one of them brings their style, their personality. And when you're playing that person, you have to adapt your game to what you're seeing on the other side of the court. And the same goes with body language. The same goes if somebody is going to mimic a Harvey Specter or somebody else and think, you know, what is that? For me, they might think, okay, there's something in the way he moves, in the way that he holds his posture, in the way that he gestures, something about that I like, but I'm not going to do it as him. I'm going to do it as me. And like, I'll give people one simple, very specific example. Something that is universal is the use of a palms down gesture. So you can see this in hieroglyphics that are thousands of years old. You can see it being used in different countries and cultures around the world, leaders, politicians, people across from the East to the West. And palms down means that you are giving a strong and specific statement. It could be a negative message, not necessarily. It could be a positive one, but it's a strong statement. It's not asking questions. Questions is palms up. But when I teach people to do this, I say, look, occasionally, if you've got an important message and you're doing palms up, you're giving the wrong message. You're making it seem like it's a question. It's a debate. People can do it or not do it. Sometimes you need the palms down, just like sometimes you need to use a backhand in tennis. But every time I teach someone to do palms down, everybody does it differently. In fact, there was a guy I taught once who was, I think he was like 19, and he was much cooler than I am. And he came from like this sort of music background, and I taught him to do palms down, and he did it in such a way that was so smooth that I can't do it. I can't pull it off at all. Anytime I try and represent his movement, it just doesn't look or feel right on me. But I was glad that he owned it. So when he was doing a talk to a crowd that I'd coached him for, he was then able to do it as him, but using that specific strategy.
Oh, love it. Love it. Yeah. Having your own style with it. And yeah, again, what you're saying, it's not about being someone else. It's about using elements they like. Like, I remember the job I was in at the time, it wouldn't have done me any favors by going in and saying, I don't effing care what the situation is like in the middle of a meeting. That's kind of, I wasn't in a high-fired court environment, for example, when they're going at each other, or more private. Well, they wouldn't say that in court, in the kind of private, more interrogation kind of scenes in those kind of rooms where he'd be going at the opposition lawyer. But it was more like the way he would walk, for example, just like into the office, the way that if I was working my desk, I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, what would you like kind of thing. It'd be a bit more like sat back and just taking your time and, you know, appreciating them, but appreciating yourself as well. So taking elements you could use of that. So I love that. What one kind of question that came out of that a little bit is, when we look at other people, and going back to what you said earlier, when we look at other people sometimes and think, wow, they're such a great communicator, they're so confident in the way they are with people, what kind of advice would you give to someone who's perhaps comparing themselves to others and not feeling good as a result?
Yeah, well, I think comparison is comparison can make people feel really disappointed in themselves. We see this on social media all the time, where, you know, for me, that comparison is similar to if you look at people on Instagram and think, wow, you know, she's so gorgeous and I never will be, or he's got this amazing life and I'll never have it. And the truth is that, you know, they're putting up photoshopped, very highly selective pictures. They're not putting the picture up of where they are in their scruffiest clothes, just rolling out of bed, screaming at the children because, you know, they've just broken a vase. Like, they don't put that up on there. They're just saying, hey, here's me when I got on a private jet once in my life. And then we imagine, oh, wow, that must be who they are and everything about that. And so I think about that in terms of public speaking or communication. And along the lines of, I mean, even today I did an event that had people dialing in internationally to do this. I was teaching storytelling. And normally when I teach storytelling online, I do about an hour and a quarter, maybe an hour and a half, because there's a lot that gets involved. It's a lot, really interactive. And I was asked to get it done in 28 minutes. And so I was having to do everything in less than half the time. There's a lot of technology involved on their side, on my side. I was changing cameras. I was getting, you know, various different interaction tools I was using. And when we finished, they said, how was that for you? And I said, I feel like I've just been having a 29-minute heart attack. But I hope it came across okay for you. And they said, you're kidding. Like, everything seemed so smooth. You seemed so confident. It was so engaging. The time passed like it was 5 minutes, not 30 minutes. And I know that this is true as well when I've been speaking at conferences where before the speakers go on stage, if we're doing the technical check, you know, very often a speaker will come up to me saying, oh, how are you feeling about today? I'm feeling a bit nervous, not sure about this audience. I've been told that, you know, they've had a challenging day yesterday, and then they're, you know, fumbling over their slides, and I can see them pacing back and forth, getting ready. But the audience would never know that. What the audience sees is the introduction music comes up, lights and lasers, the person strolls on stage and seems to be uber confident, strolls off of stage, will meet me backstage going, oh, I don't know about that. I really don't know if I engage the audience. And I'll be saying, that was awesome. Like, they're still doing the standing ovation. What do you mean? But I've seen that time and time again, that we perceive that the person is utterly confident, but many times that may not be going on inside. And a couple more thoughts for people to think about, you know, around that is that I've gone through a stage of being really panicked when going to important events to speak in front of groups, down to a stage of feeling completely at ease with myself. And I feel really grateful for that. And part of that comes from doing it so often. And so I'd encourage people to say, rather than think, okay, that person's good, I'm not, therefore I'll never try. That to me is a bit like saying, well, that person's good at playing the piano after they've had 100 piano lessons. I haven't had any. I'm not good, therefore I never will be. And you know, if it's a skill you want to get better at, it's a skill everybody can have. There's no such thing, there's been big debate about this, there's no such thing as some people are born communicators and some people aren't. Everybody can get good at this. And you know, I hope that I'm living proof of that fact, that I started from a position of 50 steps behind other people and have been able to come out on top here. So, you know, if you're seeing other people being able to do it better, just start the journey. Just start today. Put yourself forward for every opportunity to speak up in a meeting. Make sure that every Zoom call you've got with your team, that you put forward some ideas, even if it doesn't go well. Then reflect afterwards. What did I do well? What didn't go well? Maybe ask a colleague that knows you well to give you some feedback and ask them what was good. Where am I missing? Where could I improve? And just keep that journey going and be patient with it. And it may take some time to get there, or you can condense it if you want to go on coaching and get immersed into some new techniques. But it is about embedding it over a long period of time.
Yeah, not getting that overnight instant gratification. I've done it a couple of times. It should be working by now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad you, and thanks for sharing your kind of experience when you've been on the journey. I mean, for me, I get that feedback as well, kind of, wow, you seem very confident podcasting. But I remember in my 20s being terrified to say my name in a meeting when I was in the corporate setting, and I'd be like, my name, and like I was terrified going red, and it was just through repetition and pushing myself and working on that self-esteem, that confidence, that really pushed me as well. So I'm glad you've kind of shared your journey, because I do like to emphasize that. I really like your example of 100, like if someone was doing 100 piano lessons, right, and then you go, well, I haven't done any, but I expect to be amazing. It's exactly like that. So great analogy. So Richard, been an amazing set of value, and I've certainly got a couple of actions I want to take away in terms of the body language and everything we're talking about. But if you were to share a couple of pointers for people to kind of start working on their self-confidence, what would they be to just kind of leave us off?
So I think, first of all, I would say, really a key to building your confidence and having a strong mindset here is to focus on internal validation. And internal validation is so important for communication, because so often what happens is that someone will go into a meeting with their boss or into a job interview, particularly for a presentation. And what they're looking for is for that other person to nod and smile or clap or say yes. And when those things are not happening, it creates a very high state of stress, makes our heart rate increase, makes our cortisol stress levels increase, because we're seeking external validation if we perceive that it's not there. And often, as I teach clients, actually the audience is enjoying it, but they're so engrossed that they are saying nothing, that they are being still. And sometimes that's a good thing, and it can be misread as, oh, these people don't like me, because the inner voice says they don't like you, leave the building. And so I would say, get really focused on internal validation before you go into the room. And internal validation comes from, there's many techniques you can use, but my favorite one on this is to focus on your personal values. Really get clear. And this comes, there's great evidence on this from the Trier social stress test, if people want to look it up for some evidence, that if you focus on your personal values, such as the principles that you use to guide your life, then you get really clear about who you are as a person, and great decisions that you've done in the past, great actions that you've done, and who you want to be. You don't need the external validation. You don't go into a meeting thinking, I hope this person buys from me. I hope they really like me. I'll be anything they need me to be in order to like me. And then you lose yourself. You're really focused on, this is who I am. I believe in who I am. I care about who I am. And these are principles I stick to. And it makes you much more likely not only to feel good, but to get a better reaction. So that's number one. You've got to have the internal validation. Don't seek it externally. Put a post up on social media and don't care if people like it or follow it or comment on it. Just say it because that's what you believe. And so internal validation is good to work on. Secondly, I would say it's really important, if you want to be an effective communicator, to be in a lifted state, as I describe it. So that means, before you go into a situation, don't just rush in, certainly not like sort of rush and be late and get stressed about being in traffic or stuck on the train and then just fumble into that meeting where you're feeling stressed. Take the time that you need before a meeting to get settled in your state, which might be that you want to find, for me, because I'm highly introvert, it's my preference, I'll find a quiet place where I don't have to say anything. I can focus on my breathing, slowing my heart rate down, and getting really clear on how I want other people to feel. And so I get settled before then going in. It could be for other people, they might wanna go running in the morning, they wanna think about breathing, working out, doing something that gets them into a lifted state, ready for that day. So it's important to focus on doing that. But when you get in the room, you have to remember it's not about you. When you get in there, you've got internal validation, you've lifted yourself. Then what you need to do is to focus entirely on lifting others. Your job when you communicate with anyone, particularly if you're face to face, because that's a rare commodity these days, is to make sure that when you speak to people, aim that by the end of that conversation, they feel lifted. They're going from a negative or a neutral state to a more positive state based on their interaction with you. And by doing that, it takes you away from a state of self-consciousness, fully focused on others, not looking for validation, but looking to have a positive impact on them. And not doing it from a state of stress, doing it from a state of desire to lift them. And if you can follow those pieces, then that'll put you in a really confident and settled and centered state where you feel proud of what you did when you leave, whether you get the results or not.
That's some great final words there, especially relate to the internal validation, which is a very difficult thing to do these days. So with everything like social media, etc. So love those kind of final words there, Richard. So it's been a very valuable conversation, some very key points you've given us today. So thank you for your time. Where can people find out more about your work if they want to, or your books, for example?
Yeah, so if people want to find me and my team, then the best place is to go to ukbodytalk.com, ukbodytalk.com. Mm-hmm. Or if they want to find me on social media, I'm mainly on LinkedIn. I put up posts there every week. So Richard Newman from Body Talk on LinkedIn. And on Instagram, I'm at Richard Newman Speaks.
Awesome. We'll be sure to link those in the notes as well. And so people can find you. So once again, Richard, a big thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Johnny. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So that concludes our episode for today. But remember, work on your self-confidence every single day.